Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Nice buns, soft, fluffy, and ultra low net carbs. Discover Hero Bread, the delicious ultra low net carb bread with incredible taste and texture. Hero Bread has 0 grams of sugar and is under 100 calories per serving. Plus, high in fiber with 5 to 10 grams of protein per serving. Available on Amazon.com, Walmart.com, and at Hero.co. That's Hero.co. Delicious, ultra-low net-carb Hero Bread buns and tortillas. Soft and fluffy, high in fiber, and with 0 grams of sugar. Up to 10 grams of protein, coming in at under 100 calories. Order today at Hero.co and use the code AH10 to get 10% off your first purchase. That's AH10 at Hero.co. Hero.co. Order from Hero.co now and get 10% off your first purchase with promo code AH10. That's 10% off with code AH10. Hero.co.
Bowie was always, from a young child, he was fascinated by all things America. Bowie was the fly in the milk. He became almost like a mysterious kind of film noir sort of character. Ziggy Stardust and Aladdin Sane made him massive in this country, but he was still really a very underground cult star in America. It's been like the holy grail of Bowie fans for many, many years now. He was kind of kept a mystery and he was hardly ever on TV. And then he went off to America and did all this amazing, amazing Diamond Dogs tour and everything that we actually never saw.
Mark Wardell, welcome. I mean, what an amazing book. The Fly in the Milk, David Bowie, cracked actor. How did it come about, first of all?
Thank you. It came about because I'd always been obsessed with this film, and it's been hailed by many people as one of the greatest, if not the greatest, rockumentary of all time. And I've always been astonished that, you know, there have been hundreds of books about Bowie. There have been books about his films, his acting. There's never been a standalone critical study about this film, which I've been obsessed with since I watched it as a 17-year-old in 1975, and it completely blew me away. A few years ago, a US writer called Susan Compo, a very, very well-respected US academic writer, she's written lots of biographies of actors and things like that, wrote a book called Earthbound, which was a critical study about The Man Who Fell to Earth, the David Bowie movie from 1975. And Susan had heard about me somehow. She's based in LA, but she'd heard about me because of the Bowie masks that I'd done for the V&A, and because David Bowie had bought some, there'd been a bit of press about it. And she approached me to contribute a piece to her book. and some photographs and images as well, which I was delighted to do. And I actually wrote a piece about my first time of watching Cracked Actor, because it's all tied in with A Man in Felsworth, because Bowie only got the part in The Man Who Fell to Earth because Nick Rogue was shown a print of Cracked Actor. And he said, that's my alien. You know, he doesn't need to do anything else. He looks, you know, I mean, he looks like he's from another planet. So I contributed to Susan's book and I got on very well with her. And we continued to communicate by email as friends. And one day we were chatting and Susan told me that she was trying to figure out a new idea. Another idea for a book or some, or a book project or a writing project. And I suggested that we collaborate on a book about Cracked Actor. And Susan was into the idea. She was very, she thought it was a great idea because it's almost a prequel to her book and a prequel to the Man Who Fell to Earth movie. So we that's how we started writing it.
So how did you then, and also talk about her approach, but how did you both then approach doing this? Because the documentary is obviously out there, but you also went deeper than that, didn't you?
Yes. I'm lucky enough to have been in contact with several of the people who worked with Bowie at the time and who were involved at that period. And so I approached people like Tony Zanetta, the amazing guy who was on those tours with Bowie and kind of acted as his road manager almost on there, and knew all about it, did interviews with him. And obviously, naturally, I wanted to speak to Alan Yentob, who made the documentary. And so I approached Dylan Jones, the journalist and fashion editor, who I knew through Instagram as a Bowie fan, and he also liked my Bowie work. And I explained to him that I was working on this book about Cracked Actor, which was going to be featuring a lot of my artworks and everything, and I would like to speak to Alan Yentob. And Dylan kindly put me in touch with Alan, and Alan came back and said that he'd be happy to help, which was amazing, really, because, you know, I kind of hadn't really thought that that would actually happen. So Alan came back and said that he would be happy to help. So we set, Susan came over from LA and we had lunch with Alan Yentob. He took us to a very nice lunch at the Woolsey, which is a very nice restaurant in the West End. And we had a very nice lunch and spoke to him about Cracked Actor and got quotes and information from him. And I also interviewed his, Alan didn't remember, there was certain things he couldn't really remember about it. I mean, because it was a long time ago and he's done really a lot of, you know, everyone remembers him for Cracked Actor, but he's done a lot of things since then. So his memory was a bit shaky on a lot of stuff. So I interviewed Carol Bell, who was his assistant on Cracked Actor. Very nice lady. She now lives in Los Angeles. And I did a very long interview with her. And she had like a photographic memory of absolutely everything that happened. So I got a lot of detail from her. And the other source was, I went to Susan, my co-writer, contacted BBC Archives in Caversham Park, and they had the original 1975 production file of Cracked Actor, which had had transcripts of everything that was filmed. Because the thing with Cracked Actor is a lot of material was filmed for the programme. And only a fraction of it really got used. They filmed the entire concert from three or four different camera positions. They filmed many interviews with Bowie that didn't make it onto the film and with other people. And so there were transcripts of all of this stuff that they'd filmed, all of the goings on backstage and all of that sort of stuff, letters, between the Universal Amphitheatre and Yentob about union matters and all kinds of stuff like that. So I went down to Caversham Park and they handed me this file, which looked like it hadn't been opened since 1975, and spent a couple of hours just going through all this incredible information about Cracked Actor, which a lot of it we utilised in the book. And the other great thing is we should have been liable to pay, you know, the BBC quite a lot of money to use this. And Alan Yentob kindly pulled some strings for us, and the BBC gave us carte blanche to use all this information. So there is a lot of information in our book about this film that no one, and a lot of transcripts of interviews with Bowie and others that have never been published or heard.
Let's talk about that. What specifically for you was a surprising or eye-opening, you know, thing that you've actually discovered and found?
Well, there were a lot of eye-opening things, really. I'm not sure that one particular thing stands out. I mean, there are sequences that never made it. For instance, of Bowie in a screening room with David Putnam watching a rough cut of the documentary James Dean, First American Teenager, which came out in 75 at the same year as Cracked Actor, and Bowie talking about James Dean and a story that he tells, and it's patently not true, but it's amusing and it's all transcribed, where he claims that he used to know the Cray twins and visit them in prison. Which is absolutely, I think it was cocaine, I think it was a bit of cocaine shtick he was going into, because it's absolutely not true at all. So there's things like that that were really funny. There's things like there's a sequence documented where in the concerts for Cracked Actor and Rock and Roll With Me, he wears this beautiful red Shakespearean cape cloak. And during the last concerts on the tour, he actually gives the cloak away to this girl in the audience. And the transcript notes that she tries to give it back, but Bowie lets her keep it. So there's all kinds of amazing stories. Bowie coming out of his dressing room and asking for the lyrics to one of his songs. And he kneels down on the floor going through his lyrics and stands up, and he and the backing singers all start singing one of the songs as he goes back into the dressing room. Just fascinating snapshots of behind the scenes stuff, because we in Britain never got to see this tour, and we hardly ever got to see David Bowie on TV at all, because he was kind of kept a mystery, and he was hardly ever on TV. And then he went off to America and did all this amazing Diamond Dogs tour and everything that we actually never saw. So this whole period was a kind of mystery, and this file was kind of opening Pandora's box, or not Pandora's box, opening a sort of treasure box of tantalizing clues to a lot of this mysterious stuff. The other thing is that all the extra footage that was filmed has since either been junked by the BBC, lost, or is, as keeps being rumored, in private collections of people who've got hold of it illegally somehow and holding onto it. So it's been like the holy grail of Bowie fans for many, many years now that this footage should turn up. So having these transcripts and descriptions of everything that was filmed is kind of, if it never shows up, this is the closest anyone's ever going to get to know, to actually have an idea of what was filmed and what they could have seen or heard.
Why was this period of Bowie so important? I mean, the documentary really, you know, you mentioned the word snapshot, and in a sense, this was a snapshot of David Bowie during a specific period. Why was that period so important to Bowie?
He and his management, their goal was to break America, because obviously that was where the money was. You know, he was Ziggy Stardust and Aladdin Sane made him massive in this country. But he was still really a very underground cult star in America. In the press over there, he was like a massive star because they were very good at Main Man, his management company, were extremely good at publicity. But record sales were kind of, you know, in New York, perhaps in LA, but for the rest of America, you know, Cleveland, I think, was a strong city. But for the rest of America, his record sales were not very good. So part of the strategy was to break America. And we in this country had really, my generation had got onto Bowie from the Ziggy Stardust day of 1972 and 73, where he looked like Ziggy Stardust and he looked like Aladdin Sane. And back in those days, pop stars or rock stars, once they hit on a successful image, they didn't change. They kept it throughout their entire career. So when Bowie went to America in 74, he completely changed his image. He got rid of all of the kind of drag, outrageous, unisex sort of clothes, was wearing sort of quite masculine tailoring and suits. He changed his hair. He got rid of the spiky hairstyle. He toned down the makeup and everything. And he became kind of almost like, he became almost like a mysterious kind of film noir sort of character. And it was very fascinating to watch that, to read about it in the press here and to watch it in Cracked Actor, because it was just such a complete change. He kind of became darker. It was less frothy. It was less poppy and glamorous. It was a bit more, it was a bit darker, a bit more dangerous. It was, the whole thing was a bit more noir. It was like a noir movie-ish, sort of had a noir movie-ish sort of vibe.
I mean, there's a wonderful quote, which is from Mark Armand in 2020. Cracked Actor is an important film about a developing and flawed artist on his way to becoming stratospheric and arguably the most important artist of our time, which I think sort of sums up that real moment in time that he was going through. Now, in the film, in the documentary of the time, there's one of the interviews with Bowie really explains the title, The Fly in the Milk. And he says, there's a fly floating in my milk and it's like a foreign body and I couldn't help but soak it up. Mm. What does Absolutely. That mean to you?
Well, I mean, what he meant was that he was soaking up American culture and he was relating it to this supposed fly that was floating in his milk.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Subsequently, somebody pointed out, and I didn't get this at the time, but somebody said it also, and the way Bowie works, it could have been a sly kind of allude to there's a fly in my soup, because he liked to do that. He liked to drop those kind of cultural sort of markers into things, whatever. But yeah, ostensibly in the documentary, what he meant was he was soaking up American culture, which he actually was, because he was on this tour performing his back catalogue of music from the Aladdin Sane days and the Diamond Dogs album, which was kind of glam, doom-laden glam rock. And he got to America and he's driving. Bowie always had, I mean, we go into this in the book, Bowie was always, from a young child, he was fascinated by all things America, as we all were back then. You know, America, as he says, was a mythland. I mean, I remember in the 70s, we adored American cop series on TV. I always adored America, big American cars, all of that. Bowie was the same. So he gets to America. He's driving around in Cadillacs and wearing fedoras, and he's listening to soul music on the radio. And he'd always been very a big R&B fan. I mean, he'd been into Little Richard when he was 10 years old. He wanted to be Little Richard's sax player. So he had a knowledge of R&B, which was reignited when he went to America. So he's soaking up all the R&B stuff. He's driving around in big American cars, and he's living in New York. He's living in Los Angeles. He was basically soaking up America. Like, he was the fly. He was the fly. Our book is, we're actually relating it to Bowie was the fly in the milk, so to speak. And of course, that's become the catchphrase of the film. And Yentop has said many times that the first time he ever met Kate Moss, the first words she said to him were, "There's a fly in my milk."
Trying to grab all the groceries in one trip? Oof, not how you would have done that. You know, sometimes less is more. Like when you drive less and save with the USAA annual mileage discount. USAA, get a quote today.
Right now at Safeway, earn 4x rewards points when you shop for participating items with Safeway for you. Shop for items like Frigo crumbled blue cheese, Kellogg's Club Crackers, Coca-Cola, all liquid detergent, or Utz chips, and earn 4x rewards points with Safeway for you. Offer expires January 4th. Plus, get select holiday essentials like gift wraps, bags, holiday decor, lights, and more. Buy one, get one 50% off. Restrictions apply. Promotions may vary. Visit Safeway.com or head in store for full offer details.
When you first watched this documentary, Cracked Actor, back when you were a lot younger, was Bowie your milk and you were a fly in his milk?
I discovered Bowie in 72 as Ziggy Stardust and read everything I could about him. And pretty alienated teenager, I mean, I've gone over this in your other podcasts about my troubled childhood with my mum dying and moving around a lot, no dad, and realizing I was gay and everything. I kind of completely related to when he came out and said he was gay, this incredibly cool, incredibly amazing looking person said that he was gay. There was, you know, at that time, there were no role models. You know, we didn't want to be like John Inman or Larry Grayson or anyone like that. And suddenly there was someone you thought, this is the person that, you know, I really can relate to. And I want to be like this person. And Bowie also espoused at that time the idea that you could reinvent yourself as anyone you want. And I just bought the entire thing and soaked up. I learned everything really about culture from Bowie because he would name check stuff in his interviews. He would name check film directors, music artists. I first heard of Warhol, The Velvet Underground, William Burroughs, Jean Genet, Iggy Pop, all of this stuff, which I wasn't being taught at school. You know, I didn't care about tin mining in Nova Scotia or whatever they were trying to teach you at school. I wanted to hear about, you know, all this cool stuff that Bowie was teaching us about. So I soaked it all up. I mean, I really did and continue to do so. And and always have. I mean, I think Bowie, if he hadn't been an amazing, enormous influence on the music scene, I think he would have made a great teacher. And I think he's even said that himself in some of his interviews, because he really got a buzz from imparting knowledge to other people, you know. And when he famously wrote me a letter in 79, and it was basically recommending books I should read, you know, because he wanted to turn me on to these particular books that he was interested in at the time. Amazing person. I mean, and for a star of that stature to write from Berlin a handwritten letter to a fan, you know, from a star at the height of his fame, to recommend some books and thank me for a picture that I had sent to him. I just, I'm still astonished by it, actually, you know. And I think Cracked Actor is I learnt a lot about style and how to kind of present yourself and everything from that, as have a lot of fashion designers, because nearly every season you'll see garments on a catwalk that you can say, oh, that I've seen, that's a Bowie-esque look. Obviously, a lot of them, quite often they reference more the Ziggy Stardust period, but a lot of the more high-end designers frequently reference his Thin White Duke or Cracked Actor period, you know, with the padded shouldered jackets and the fedora hats and all of that sort of thing. So Cracked Actor has had a massive influence on fashion and on music. I mean, you know, I'm friendly and have been friendly with a lot of people who made it as big pop stars in the 80s. Every single pop star or person in a band that I knew who were all massive in the 80s were all influenced by Bowie, all influenced by Ziggy Stardust, and mostly all influenced by Cracked Actor too.
I think one of the fascinating things that I find about you is this central figure in your life, Bowie, and how your work has really, in a sense, revolved around him. When Susan approached you, you said she'd seen or was interested in a piece of work. I think a mask, the V&A stuff that you'd done. How did that develop into bringing other pieces of your art into this book, and how did you choose what you wanted to use?
The problem with Cracked Actor is that apart from what was filmed, and most of the footage is missing except what's in the actual documentary that we can watch, there was very, very little behind the scenes material. There's a few Terry O'Neill shots that we managed to secure for the book, which have never been published, of Bowie having the mask made. But apart from that, there was very, very little visual material relating to it, apart from the actual film itself. And as I'd always been, it had always been an influence on my work. And over the years, I'd done a lot. In fact, the artwork that I sent to Bowie in 78, which led him to write to me, was a collage of Cracked Actor artworks that I'd actually made at art school in the 70s, interspersed with some quotes from Jack Kerouac on the Road, because I'd heard that he was a fan of Kerouac. So I'd always been using Cracked Actor imagery in my artwork. So the natural stage was, as we decided we wanted to make the book very visual, because obviously Bowie was such a visual artist, it stood to reason that as there was very little photographic material, we'd use what photographic material we could get, and the rest of the images would be made up of my artworks. So that's how that sort of came about.
I mean, one of the most amazing quotes in Cracked Actor as well is this: "I'm just a space cadet. He's the commander."
That's a girl, now a woman, obviously, called Hannah Lulu, who she was obviously a massive Bowie fan that went to that concert and was filmed. And she's become, I mean, that's one of the catchphrases, one of the major catchphrases from the film as well. I've recently been put in touch with Hannah Lulu because she was involved with a big World Bowie convention they did in New York last year. And they've approached me about it being involved with next year's, which is going to be in Liverpool. I'm kind of art directing a lot of stuff for it. I'm going to be presenting a Cracked Actor kind of evening and talking about the book and the film and everything. So I've been communicating with Hannah Lulu, and she's absolutely fantastic. She's still very kind of camp and very sort of, she's still a space cadet, basically, you know, and she's absolutely great. And she's coming over to present. She's going to be hosting the Liverpool Bowie convention. So that's going to be a blast. She's just great, yeah. And she is aware that she's kind of famous throughout the world. It's very strange. I said to her, look, you're someone it's been in my consciousness since 1975. And so strange now to be in contact with this person. You know, if someone had told me in 1975 when I was watching Cracked Actor, you'll be writing a book about it, you'll be in constant contact with Alan Yentob, who'll be helping you, and he has, he's been an amazing help. You'll be speaking to the Space Cadet, you'll be speaking to a lot of the people that were involved in that. I would have probably keeled over and died of shock, you know, I wouldn't have believed it. It's quite amazing. So this book really has been, it's been a labour of love and obsession, you know. And I just, you know, I just gave up waiting for someone else to do it. You know, it just wasn't happening. So we decided to do it ourselves.
I mean, there's something you mentioned earlier about that period in the early 70s when Bowie came along and the people that we as gay teenagers at that point had as identification figures that we didn't want, the sort of John Inmans, the camp comedians of Britain.
Yeah, yeah.
And in this, and I found that fascinating, that there's this Barney's Beanery, and it says emblazoned on the shirt's back was a replica of its notoriously offensive and primitively spelled bar sign, faggot stay out.
Yeah, get out. Amazing, isn't it? Well, and the amazing thing is that there's a guy seen in Cracked Actor, the guy with the long blonde hair who looks like a member of the Eagles or something, is wearing a Barney's Beanery t-shirt. Now, you couldn't really, in 1974 on that tour, you couldn't really be in more of a gay environment because most of the characters were, the main man characters, they were mostly all gay, you know, and Bowie himself was bisexual, although he later said he wasn't, but he plainly was, because I've spoken to a lot of guys who actually slept with him, and I, you know, people that knew him really well. And so that guy, I don't know, we assume that he is wearing it as a kind of ironic sort of thing, I would imagine, because he wouldn't have been able to get away with wearing that as a serious statement in that environment, because he would have been drummed out, you know, he would have been kicked off. So he must have been doing it ironically. But it's quite amazing. I didn't even know about that, because obviously you don't see the back of his T-shirt. Susan knew all about this because she was obviously, Susan went to these concerts at the time in 74. She was at the concert that was filmed for Cracked Actor. And she obviously knew Barney's Beanery, and she knew all about this faggots keep out or stay out or whatever exactly it was. And it was Susan that told me about that. So that was interesting new information.
I mean, you mentioned that Bowie being an artistic phenomenon, you know, a musical phenomenon, that he's influenced so many artists and also so many genres of music, that he's influenced fashion. Do you think he's had an enormous impact, a social impact on society, and really effectively made a change, probably in how we view sexuality is one, but how do you feel his impact, what has his impact been?
I think his impact was greater back in the 70s when he came out and firstly said he was gay and then kind of retracted it to bisexual. That made a very big impact then. And you could see it almost became fashionable to be, say you were bisexual in the 70s, even if you weren't, you know. So I think it had a big impact then, obviously helped by his wife, Angie, who was very into that whole promoting this whole free sexuality kind of thing. I think in his later years, Bowie kind of really, unfortunately, he kind of went back on it all and denied that he was bisexual, and he kind of recreated himself as the perfect heterosexual family man, and kind of didn't really, you know, he didn't, I think he kind of, it sort of lost all that, whether it was post-AIDS or what, I don't know. But I think the effect was really in the 70s. And I think it was kind of, I think the effect's been lost now. And a lot of the fans, it's amazing, and a lot of the young fans, they don't like hearing any kind of gay stuff or bisexual stuff about David Bowie. It's kind of, they really don't like it now. And there's this kind of trend, and it happened with the Queen biopic with Freddie Mercury, where they try to whitewash all of this. You know, in the biopic, it was almost like, oh, he wasn't really gay. He was in love with Mary and he just got in with the wrong people, you know, and that's outrageous. You know, Freddie Mercury was one of the gayest men. And I used to see, I didn't know him well, but I mean, I used to frequent a lot of clubs where he was there. He was an outrageously gay man, you know. So there's this awful sort of trend now to try and kind of retract and whitewash all of this, like, oh, well, it was just that time and they weren't really like this. And I think there's quite a bit of that goes on with Bowie as well.
You know, as a sort of final statement, in terms of all the work you've done on this book and all the research you had to do, what can you say you've taken away which will now feed into your future work?
I sort of saw this book as being almost like a catharsis to get rid of all this, to get it off my chest. For this obsession that I've carried since 1975, I sort of thought, I'll put it all into this book, I'll say as much as I can about it, I'll put it out there, and that'll be the end of it. But I don't really know now the book's actually here and everything, and I'm going to be involved in this World Bowie Conference next July in Liverpool. I'm kind of right back into it all again. So, I mean, I thought this was going to be, I don't think you ever get over David Bowie, and I don't think I'll probably ever get over Cracked Actor.
Brilliant. Mark Waddell, thank you so much.
Thanks, Steve. Pleasure.
Up there is an interview I recommend. Down there is where you can find all the podcast interviews, and here is where you can connect.
Not all bread is created equal. And if you like your soft, fluffy, moist, and delicious, then Hero Bread and Buns should be your first choice. But Hero Bread isn't just about taste and texture. It's high in fiber with ultra-low net carbs with 0 grams of sugar. Order today at hero.co and use the code AH10 to get 10% off your first purchase. That's AH10 at hero.co, H-E-R-O.co, for 10% off your first purchase.
We made USAA insurance for veterans like James. When he found out how much USAA was helping members save, he said,
"It's time to switch.
We'll help you find the right coverage at the right price. USAA. What you're made of, we're made for." Restrictions apply.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kyler Tsinis.
I'm Kayla Tsinis, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.